So good morning. I want to begin this morning by introducing to you three small stories on how circuits might code time interval, code time interval and memorize time interval. The first story is these three stories are based on increasingly more complex system, starting from cell culture. And its mechanism is increasingly complex and mysterious. So we might understand how a few neurons code memory, but how this is done in vivo is really the big question I want to leave you with. Now, let me start with a simple cell culture system with dissociated hippocampal cells. We know they form synapse, and synapse stores memory. Now, the simplest way is that you can, if two cells experience different spiking at a time interval, they can just remember that time interval by spike timing dependent plasticity at the synapse between them. We all know this spike timing learning rule, where you can have a firing, a postsynaptic firing before presynaptic firing, you get an LTD. The reverse, you get an LTP. So this, if the two cells are experiencing spiking at intervals of tens of milliseconds repetitively, then the synapse changes strength. Well, we can consider that's a way that a synapse detects the time interval and then memorizes it. Now, when we get a lot more cells, let's say 10, 20 cells, 30 cells in the culture, I want to ask, if you have an input to one of the cells, how would that input spread the modification within this network? Now, that we know in the cell culture, each cell makes very efficient synapse with the next cells. So excite one action potential, frequently trigger action within the next cells, and it actually can propagate down because there are hundreds of synapses made between cells. And that's unlikely to happen in vivo, because in vivo, exciting one cell, the next neuron is probably only 10 synapses get fired. You don't get that. But let's assume that we have a model system that each neuron represents a group of cells firing at the same time. And the next cell would be another group of cells, like a synfire chain. Now, if that's the case, then we have a model system of a group of cells connected with each other within, let's say, 20 groups among themselves. And then what happens if you stimulate one group? What happened to the synaptic transmission among them? Now, we can do a Gedanken experiment before that. Let's think what would happen if you stimulate one cell, you go through a different pathway, and you record from another cell. You can imagine that there are different path lengths, so the time arrival of the excitation, either EPSP or spiking at the recorded cell, might differ. So there's a time delay for different line, different pathway reaching this cell. Now, how do you detect that? Now, one might think that you can get response if you record a synaptic current with a voltage clamp. You can see synaptic current coming from the first path and the second path depending on the time of arrival. Now, this is a voltage clamp current actually recorded in a cell. In fact, it works. They are reproducibly, if you stimulate one cell in this small network, you reproducibly get synaptic currents of a defined delay in the recorded cell, suggesting that this path are reliable. They can delay up to 60, in this case, 50, 60 milliseconds. Now, this is a voltage time recording of the synaptic current inverted, this is inward current actually. So with time you see the very stable. You can present this synaptic current in a colorgram here with the intensity indicated by the color. So each line here represents a synaptic current recording. So you have a peak here, peak, second peak, third peak. So this peak stays stable over 60 minutes recording. So that suggests that you can actually monitor the polysynaptic connections among this group of cells stably, and changes in these polysynaptic currents represent change in the efficacy of transmission in different pathway. Okay, so that's in cell culture, we can actually monitor this. So now it's the real Gedanken experiment. Now the Gedanken experiment is that if we have the input that represent a time interval, very simple, let's say just a pair of pulse, two pulse, the first pulse stimulating the input, you record it in a target cell. Now let's suppose you have a two pathway reaching the target cell at different time. The first earlier gives you an EPSP, the second pathway gives you a spike at the target cell. So they would arrive at a different interval because of path length, delay line. Now, if you have a pair pulse, then what would happen? The first pulse create this red trace, EPSP and spike. The second pulse at the input create the EPSP and spike. Now, if this blue EPSP falls right before the spike created by the first pulse, then you have a pre before post situation. Now you have a LTP of this synapse because this EPSP from this input constantly falling before this spike created by the other pathway. Now so pair pulse, which represent the simplest time interval, if you repeatedly present it at a very low frequency, let's say several pairing for a while, you would keep stimulate a cell with this pair pulse. You would imagine some cell, some synapse will be potentiated. Now, if you change the interval with a different time, you might have a situation where the spike force be ahead of EPSP. Then you create a LTD rather than LTP. So the same synapse experience a different interval might get depression. So you would have a depression and a potentiation store at along the pathway at different synapses, depending on the time interval of your stimulus. So now that would be a way that the circuit might memorize this simple time interval coded in the pair pulse. So let's see whether this happens. So this is the experiment. Now you can actually do a simple experiment. You can actually stimulate one cell and record from the same cell. Because a lot of complex pathway, they actually comes back to the same cell. So a simple experiment, stimulate the same cell, record it from the same cell for the evoked response, like coming through the pathway. So here is the example of one stimulus, but you only trigger one EPSP that's persistent. Yeah, one EP, this is the EPS, see the synaptic current stable with time. Now, in this case, you stimulate the cell. This is an artifact. The big response is the artifact in the, right after stimulus. Then you look at these polysynaptic peaks. Now, here, this pathway gives, there are at least two pathways, repetitively gives you the synaptic current, but there are a lot of failures. Now here, this is another one. This is actually recorded from different cells, so you don't see the artifact. So stimulate one cell, record it from the different cell, you get polysynaptic response, three or four different pathways. So now the question is, if you repetitive stimulate this, the input with an pulse interval of 50 milliseconds, for only 20 pulse, 20 pairs, one at 1 hertz, very low frequency, and you watch the change in the synaptic current, you see this is what happened. In this particular cell, stimulate the same cell, recording from the same cell, you see before stimulation, before pair pulse stimulation, after pair pulse stimulation, you see appearance of new peaks in the recorded reproducibly. That suggests a new pathway being opened by this pair pulse. Now in this case, there's some new old pathway, this pathway 3 is disappearing after a pair pulse of 30 milliseconds. Now here is a 50 millisecond pulse. After pair pulse 20 pairs, you see you don't see increase or changes in the pathways, but you see the reliability is increased of the same path, same three paths. So here you have a increase of new peak, some decreased efficacy of an old pathways after this 100 millisecond intervals of pair pulse. So you cannot predict, because it's a random network of 20, 30 cells. You can't predict what happened. All you see is there are some change very specific to the interval of the stimulus you apply. So here is the presentation of this type of experiment in colorgram. So here, start with stimulation of the same cell. Now here's a simple experiment. You look at the response in the same cell. You can see this polysynaptic response. Now, we first try a 60 milliseconds, 20 pairs, no change. The same peaks persisted. Then we use same 20 pulse, but with a 40 millisecond interval. Now, this made dramatic change, new peaks appearing. You see this persistent for an hour. Now, it's a long-term potentiation of a pair happened to hit a pathway with 40 millisecond pair pulse. Now, this is other example. This 100 millisecond pulse didn't change very much. 50, you increase efficacy. 20, you made a little bit more, furthermore change. Now, the same, now here is a 150 millisecond pulse interval, didn't do much. 65 changed it, but the same interval repetitively applied, it didn't make much difference. So it's not that it's randomly changing every time you apply a stimulus. So in summary, we take all this experiment we recorded, we look at the probability of changing of a particular polysynaptic pathway with a different pair pulse interval we apply. We can see that the up to even to 200 millisecond interval, pulse interval, you can create changes in some pathway within this network formed by 20 or 30 cells in the culture. Now, these are all LTP, LTD type of phenomena, because if you put APV in the medium, it essentially wipes out except this point. But most of experiment, you see very little change. So there's LTP, LTD-like phenomena distributed in a path, randomly, depending on the time of interval. So we call this a delay line mechanism for storing memory up to 100 to 200 milliseconds. So this is the simplest mechanism of storing. In fact, we have went into this culture trying to detect changes in polysynaptic transmission by recording synaptic coding. Finally, indeed, that happens. Right? So I didn't show you that. Indeed, there's a LTP, LTD created by simply 20 pairs of pair pulse signal. So now, this is artificial. So what happened to a more intact system? Here, the second story is the a zebrafish tectum, a retinal tectal system, totally, completely intact. We only open the skin of the head and look at the cells. We don't even put electrode using calcium dye into the cell, monitor 100, 200 cells, and look at the change in the dynamics of this group of tectum cells and see what happened if we give some interval information and what happened to the dynamics of firing in the cell. Now, here's what we do with this stimulus. It's a moving bar across the retina of the zebrafish larva. Each time you sweep across the bar, across the retina, this group of cell will fire action potential, group of action potential. That triggers calcium, a burst of calcium influx. So you see the calcium waves among many cells. So these two cells have very reproducible calcium waves. Every time you sweep a bar across the retina. So 20 sweep of moving bar across. Some cells, we only occasionally respond. Some other cell doesn't respond. That's reasonable because they are not excited by the ganglion cells. So here is a interval information between this a few seconds for between each sweeps. Now, we were looking for the phenomenon that is cell, this group of cells that's been fired by this is 180 cells, that fire with the calcium, which represents directly proportional to the spike number. Firing the spikes, and they are specific to a moving bar, a stimulus. It's a little bar to the left, you see activity, but opposite bar, same stimulus, changes direction, you don't see it, but it's reproducible if you do a left bar again. So this group are fine reproducibly. So what happened to these cells when they are exposed to this experience? So we found a short-term change in these dynamics that codes the time interval of the between the stimulus of your between the moving bar. So now here is the this is a specific group of cells, left bar green, red cells fire when it's a right moving bar. There are a lot of cells firing for both stimulus, for both directions, right? So there's an overlap. So what we saw is this. If you do this conditioning for 20 sweeps, every time you see very nice calcium response, then you stop this conditioning, you look at the dynamics, you find that there's a few more calcium. In some cells, there are a few more calcium, synchronized calcium spikes. So the at the interval, which is directly exactly the interval of conditioning, so you have a memory of this rhythmic excitation of this network. And this is not too long. It's a few cycles up to, in this six seconds interval between the sweeps. You have, you see very, in this experiment, you see three repeats, three reverberation. If you change the interval from 4 to 6 to 10 seconds sweeping intervals, you see that this post-conditioning calcium activity codes exactly the timing. So here's the 10 seconds. Even after 10 seconds, you still see this the repeat at right 10 seconds, very, very precisely coding for the interval. So this reverberation is a short-term memory of the sweeps. Now for the behavior of this, in this zebrafish, that's a nice feature that you can monitor its behavior. In this case, we can actually monitor the zebrafish escape behavior on the stage, because you immobilize the head of the zebrafish with an agar, let the tail sweep, then you can monitor the calcium signaling in the brain, in the tectum, while looking at correlated behavior of escape behavior by the tail flips. So here's the, when you do the light stimulus, every light stimulus in during conditioning rather reproducibly produces the tail flips, which is monitored here. After the conditioning, you look at the tail flips. The tail flips a few more times at the right interval. This is a six seconds. Now, so this is so what we thought that, well, this correlates with the calcium signal, that the memory of the circuits for this time interval are reflecting now in this motor behavior, escape behavior. So I want to show you a movie, which is a fun movie, which I took the last four conditioning pulse of the tail. I signaled the time flash of the time with a sound. That sound the fish didn't hear. It's made during the movie. So the 18th, you see the every 6 seconds, flash. Now you see that the tail start whip before the light flash is on. They are preparing for it. Now, to the end of the conditioning stimulus, you watch 6 seconds. No flash, still tail flip. Another 6 seconds, tail flip. So there's the memory of this interval. So this is very precise. It's amazingly precise because it's probably better than human in memorizing 6 second interval. It's a few cycles up to 20 seconds is the time that this memory lasts. So how does it work? Which area? Is the tectum coding for this or somewhere else coding for this time? How could this circuit code 6 seconds to 10 seconds and give the repeat its activity? So that is a mystery. So there's a correlation between the calcium signals and the tail flips. Very nice correlation. So clearly, these are correlated phenomena. So finally, last few minutes, the even more complex interval learning. Now here, we come to the rat, the mammalian system, where we train the rat to memorize the time of seconds coded by the auditory signal. So the rat goes into a waiting pot, stick the head in there, the sun is on, and they have to wait for a fixed time, let's say 1.5 seconds. They have to leave the hall and get reward the other port. 1.5 seconds after the sun is on, with a different sum, they have to wait for 2.5 seconds. Then they go to the other port for reward. So they remember this time interval, a standard sun interval, and within this time, if they leave the port, within a certain time after the end of the sun, which is usually 1.5 second or 2.5 second, they get rewards. Now for testing, to exclude the possibility that rat actually remember, not remembering the time, but hear the end of the sun. So when we have a doing the test, we have half of the times we turn on the give the sun signal, the sun will last a much longer time than 1.5 second. They have to leave at 1.5 seconds if they are trained at 1.5 in order to get a war. So then they are not coding based on the end of the offset of sun. So here's the experiment. So these rats learn very well. So you can see during the training, 1.5 seconds, there's some delay for their reaction. So it's slightly slower than 1.5 seconds. They leave the hole and to get a reward during the training. In the testing trial, that sound that didn't end. That noise, only the onset, they have to start to count. And they end at different time than 1.5. When they are trained well, they also leave exactly 1.5 seconds, or slightly higher than 1.5 seconds. The same as the training to get a reward. So they can remember 1.5 seconds or 2.5 seconds very well. And if you take the mean value of each test or of each experiment, you can do a large number of sessions. You see that the mean values clustered very well for 1.5 seconds. It's between 1.7, around 1.7 mean. And for 2.5 seconds, it's about 2.7, 2.8. Very, very precise behavior. So now, activity. What happens in the prefrontal cortex of the medial prefrontal cortex? We found a lot of cells doing very different things there, but there's a small population of cells. Their activity correlates with the entry into the waiting part and the leaving the waiting part. So here we align the response with the time of the sun onset, align all the response for the same rat doing 1.5 second memory. And here is the same rat recorded from that same cell doing a 2.5 second memory. Right? So 10% of all the cells had activity that correlates with the waiting port entry and then leaving waiting port. So now this is activity. This is some of the firing rate of these cells. When they are coding for 1.5 seconds, the activity goes down a little bit and then climb up to a certain level, then they go for the reward. For a different sound signal, the activity goes down, but it lasts longer before they reach the level. Then they go. Now, here's the activity of another cell. For 1.5 seconds, it goes up and then leave. 2.5 goes up and leave. Now see, there seems to be the same pattern but stretched in time. Now here's another, rather than ramping up or ramping down activity, the activity actually goes down and fluctuate and then go down before they leave the port. Now when they go to 2.5 seconds, it goes down even more, slower. The slope is lower. Now, ramping up or ramping down activity is stretched in time for the same cell, for coding for different time. Now, there are more, even more complicated patterns. Sometimes there are several peaks, and that peak of activity also stretched. Very strange. How the circuit does this is an interesting question. But here's the large number of cells. If we scale these firing patterns between 1.5 and 2.5, scale them to the same with a factor, and find the most optimum scaling factor based on the best fit. You'll find that the scaling factors for behavior time is 1.7. It's about 0.65, 0.65 to 0.7. Very similar. This is a scaling, best scaling for cells, for many cells. So there's a correlation. So the cell seems to code a timing by its firing pattern. Now clearly this is not a single cell behavior, it's a circuit somehow coded the timing with a firing pattern that goes to a particular pattern. But when they are coding for a different time, the pattern is stretched. How does it? This is a mysterious. So that's the end of the three story. First, I show you a culture cell, very simple culture cell, through we call it delay line mechanism. You can distribute it, the interval information, into many synapses in the network. That we think we understand that it can happen, just simply by spike time independent plasticity, up to a few hundred milliseconds. Now in zebrafish, we have a different type of reverberating or rhythmic activity, an ensemble of tactile cell that code for the visual stimulus, a short-term memory of some sort, lasting for tens of seconds after the conditioning. Now, medial prefrontal cortex of a rat, there are a small population of cell that code for the time interval on the order of seconds through a firing patterns. And these firing patterns change, stretched, compressed or stretched, depending on the time it wants to code. We call it a temporal scaling mechanism. So I'll stop here. Thank you.